Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
You're listening to Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly. Now, in news out this week, China's foreign ministry said that U.S. officials who have engaged in nasty behavior over Chinese claim Taiwan will face sanctions after Washington lifted curbs on exchanges between U.S. and Taiwanese officials. And U.S. President Donald Trump has signed an executive order directing U.S. agencies to assess any security risk from Chinese-made drones in America. American government fleets and to prioritize removing them. Now, Mr. Trump directed all U.S. agencies to outline the security risks posed by existing government drone fleets from drones built by companies and other countries deemed foreign adversaries, including Russia, Iran, and North Korea on that list as well with China. Now, the latest headlines may come as no surprise to many as tensions between the U.S. and China continue. But with President-elect Joe Biden being sworn in this week, what does this mean for the relationship between the two superpowers? Well, we're joined today by Bert Hoffman, and he's the director of the East Asian Institute at NUS. To find out more, Bert, thank you so much for joining us today.
Glad to be with you.
So Bert, tell us, so a new administration coming in, what does this mean for the relationship between the U.S. and China? Is this a case of more allies, less Twitter, or that the more things change, perhaps the more they stay the same?
Well, I think what we will first see is a change in approach. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden, as a candidate, has clearly said that he wants to work more with allies. He wants to even work with China on particular issues, including climate change, including international terrorism, including international health issues, such as the pandemic that we're currently mm-hmm. experiencing. So it is not all out against China policy that we have seen from the Trump administration. Biden has also said that he will take some time to formulate a new China policy. And if you want, he's gotten his people on board, and some of the old timers from the Obama administration did join his administration. But I think those people also realize that times have changed, and that China has changed, as well as China's position in the world economy has changed, and therefore it requires a different approach. Now, they said it will take some time, maybe 6 months to a year, before there is a new China policy, and we need to see how that is going to look like. I do believe that it's going to be somewhat less confrontational, mm-hmm. and the confrontation will take place in more narrowly defined topics. Clearly, China is a competitor for the United States and a potential adversary in the future. And a country such as the United States needs to be aware of that and needs to take measures because of that. But having an all-out, all aspects of government attack on China, that we will no longer see. We'll see much narrower approaches. If you want small yards with very high fences in the technology area, so some areas will be protected, but it doesn't have to be an across-the-board protection and across-the-board confrontation.
And you mentioned competition, but let's talk trade, because we have just passed the one-year anniversary of the U.S.-China trade war deal, with some reports stating that bilateral mistrust is at an all-time high. Where are we with the trade balance at the moment, and have we seen a widening divide there?
Well, look, the Phase One agreement was, of course, meant to reduce the bilateral trade deficit. Economists mm-hmm. such as myself say the bilateral trade deficit doesn't matter, but of mm-hmm. course politically it mattered an awful lot for Donald Trump and for the United States. That policy failed. That's not just the Trump policy, it's not just the tariffs, it's not just the agreement. There's also the impact of COVID, which was quite dramatic for most of the world, but China was the first country to overcome it. And therefore, they could start exporting a lot earlier than most other countries. And that's how you see a deterioration in the balance. The bilateral balance was over $300 billion in deficit for the United States. That mm-hmm. was up by almost 8% compared to last year. And so in that sense, Phase One hasn't really helped. If you look at the specific commitments that China made in the Phase One agreement late in January last year, they're also falling short. And that's in part because the US couldn't deliver, but also because it took a while before they got going. So if you look at the latest numbers available are November, you broadly can see that about 55 to 60% of the commitments were met. And that's a clear shortfall that won't be made up in December. And so in that sense, the phase one agreement hasn't done its job. But as I said, the COVID situation, of course, played a big role there.
And, you know, speaking of this trade divide, Bert, we've recently seen the Trump administration blacklist a number of companies, Xiaomi Corp, for alleged military links. It's been added to the Defense Department's list of Chinese military companies. What are your thoughts on these moves? You recently mentioned, you know, the impact on the relationship when it comes to investment in China, Chinese tech firms. What are your thoughts on what's happening on this front?
Well, yes, look, clearly, a country, not just the United States, has a right under international agreements, under WTO agreements, from a national security point of view, to protect itself against any influence of foreign companies. This specific measure of the United States was taken on the under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act of 1977. So, if you want, that was at the height of the Cold War, and a measure basically to make it impossible for foreign countries that supported the then adversary, the Soviet Union, to do business in the West. So the question is, well, is this appropriate at this point in time, given the very deep integration that China has in the world economy? And if you look at it, the specific of the Department of Defense, and the specifics is to prevent or to counter the civil military integration policy that China has announced. But if you look at the United States, they're doing exactly the same. I mean, the United States has literally thousands of contractors for its defense, and very well-known names such as Boeing, such as Microsoft, even Singaporean companies are among the top contractors for the Department of Defense. So China is moving in that direction. They used to have a tradition of having just military companies doing military stuff. They recognize that that's not a very good way to go. And so the civil military integration is about also tapping non-military companies for their technology that might be useful for defense. So there's nothing new. That's what most Western countries do. Saab, for instance, is used to make great cars, but they're also a very big contractor. Boeing makes great civil planes, but they're also a very big military contractor. So in a way, that is nothing new. What China's doing is nothing new. The specific, look, there's Huawei, of course, is on the list. Sinochem is on the list. Xiaomi, the phone maker, and Comac, the airplanes, is now on the list. So it's hard to see a specific, but a lot of construction companies are on the list. It's hard to see a very specific pattern. Some are clearly military companies, traditional military companies, but a lot you would say, well, do they belong on the list? And I believe this is an area where a Biden administration, if they want to signal a bit less confrontational attitude, this is one of the things that they can move on first.
We're speaking with Bert Hoffman, director of the East Asian Institute at NUS. So, Bert, would you say, though, that the issues between the U.S. and China are structural? Does this go beyond a change in administration?
Well, look, clearly, there's never a great relationship between the number one and the number two. If you look into history, that's never been a great affair, and there's always been friction. And frankly, in the past, quite often it resulted in outright conflict. The United States is very uncomfortable with the rise in China and has taken some approach in the past, basically, to try and befriend China and to integrate China in the world system. China is now taking a different course. They say, no, we have our own system and we're taking a different direction. We don't necessarily want to become just like the United States. We have a different one. And that has created a lot of discomfort. Also, the political directions that Xi Jinping has taken domestically, and the suppression of opinions, the actions in Xinjiang, the actions in Hong Kong, have brought a lot of discomfort, not just in the United States, basically across the world. So if you look at public opinions across the world, they have deteriorated quite rapidly. If you look at political opinions in the United States, they're particularly adversarial to China. And so Joe Biden can't just ignore that. He can't just say, oh, I'm going to take a different approach. I go back to the engagement strategy that we had in the 2000s. So he has to define a new type of strategy where under the new circumstances, one can still have an accommodation of China in one way or another.
So what will you be looking out for this week following Biden's inauguration? And as you say, this changing relationship with the number one and the number two?
Well, first, that your inauguration happened, that would be good, and without any turbulence, yes, without any riots, that would be very important, and a very important signal, frankly, for the rest of the world. Second, as I said, the coming week, I don't expect too much, but over the coming weeks or months, I see the Biden administration defining a new China strategy, which will be more diverse. And if you look at the European strategy, in a way, they've done an interesting step. They say, well, China is an adversary in some aspects, but it's also a competitor, and then it's also a partner. So it's a three-pronged strategy. Something like that the Biden administration can formulate. Finally, what I expect is that over time, the Biden administration will reach out to other parts of the world, and not just politically, not just strategically, but also economically. We've seen in the past couple of months, if you want big wins for China, through the signing of RCEP and the signing of the Comprehensive Agreement of Investment with the Europeans, which basically makes China more central to the world economy. And the United States has never really offered an alternative under Trump. I think it's very important for Biden to formulate a more economic alternative, so that it's not just a security geopolitical alternative that they offer, but also an economic alternative. And that's going to be Biden's homework. It's not easy, but it's essential to convince some of its traditional partners to side with the United States on those issues that they would like to change.
Okay, well, Bert, thank you so much for all of those insights.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Bert Hoffman, director at the East Asian Institute at National University of Singapore, right here on Primetime on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.